Thanks for the introduction. My name is Kaushik Veeraraghavan. Today I'm going to talk about QFiles, a new method to add context awareness to file systems. This is joint work with my advisor Jason Flynn, Ed Nightingale, and Brian Noble. Traditionally, file systems have been designed with the idea that a user is accessing his data, either from home or from work, through a computer, you know, which possibly has a really large monitor and a speedy network. As the user always accesses data from the same context, the file system always returns the same representation of data. However, this way of accessing data is fundamentally changing. As we heard from Professor Brewer earlier today, cell phones and all these other devices are increasingly a part of our lives. So users might want to access the data from their cell phones or smartphones when they're waiting at a bus stop. Or we might want to access data from our TiVos and Xboxes when we're sitting at home in front of our large TV. Or, like many of us here, we might be accessing data through our laptops, when we're at a conference. In all of these scenarios, we probably want to access the same logical file. However, what we'd like, ideally, is a representation that caters best to our local context. For instance, I want a representation of data that fits for my cell phone's limited screen size and battery lifetime. Or I might want a file that my TiVo can play back and my Xbox can play back. Or, you know, we want files that have been scaled appropriately so none of which leads too much bandwidth and latency. So that is, in all these different contexts, what we want is a user to be able to see the right file at the right time. This isn't to say that context-aware systems that return the right file for a particular context haven't been built. In fact, over the past few decades, we as a community have developed many systems that adapt their display of data for a particular context. For instance, we have energy-aware adaptation, which selects video resolution based on battery lifetime. And on-demand distillation instructs a proxy to vary video fidelity based on network quality. So unfortunately, these systems and many others that have been developed are monolithic implementations that require custom changes to the operating system, the application stack, and often the inclusion of intermediary proxies, all of which hinder their adoption and their interoperability with each other. So we thought about this, and we believe that the problem here is that each of these adaptation systems builds both an adaptation system that generates different representations of data for different varying contexts, and a management system that takes care of storing all these representations and returning the right one to the application when needed. So our insight here is, hey, why don't we go about and decouple the adaptation from management? So the key contribution of our work, really, is a common abstraction for context-aware data management so the developer can build new and interesting context-aware schemes without really worrying much about how this data is stored or how it's served up to applications. So, well, what's the right place to manage data for all of these different contexts? And our idea is that, well, we think that the file system is the right place to manage all these different representations because a file system is already tasked with managing a user's data. So you might be thinking, hey, let's get rid of current file systems and, you know, redesign the world, right? That's not what I'm going to say here. What I'll instead demonstrate in this talk is we can actually incorporate context awareness within existing file systems with minimal modifications. The insight that permits us to do this is the realization that the way we present data to users can be very different from how it's actually internally stored. So we can retain the existing hierarchical organization of files and existing file systems to store data, but simply change the interface that's used to access data. So, well, all we'll then need to do to create a new context of our system is to write the policies, because this mechanism is already present in the file system that most applications live upon. Later in the talk, I'll show you how we can build two new and interesting context-aware applications in just a matter of weeks, which may be less than 100 lines of code. A second benefit is that there's lots and lots of applications that are already out there that use the file system to store the data and retrieve it and so on. All of these applications can be used unmodified and, in essence, become context-aware because context is now supported at the file system at the layer beneath them. So the abstraction that does this is a QFile. A QFile is a new file system object that encapsulates different physical representations of the same logical data. When the QFile is accessed, a context-aware mechanism selects the best representation to return. So in the first slide, when I showed you, you know, the user trying to access data from all these different contexts, maybe he has a different representation for each of them that's provided by some system. The current way of dealing with this, which might be sort of dumb, is to dump all of these in a directory and either have the user manually search for the right representation when he needs it, or have the application pull up the representation that it wants. In our scheme, instead of dumping data in a directory like this, we instead encapsulate it within a queue file. So what we'd like now is, you know, when the user on the desktop accesses this queue file, all he should see is a high-resolution video that's been formatted appropriately for the desktop. Similarly, when the user on the cell phone accesses the queue file, he should see a low-resolution video that's been appropriately formatted and scaled for the cell phone's limited screen size and battery lifetime. Notice that in both of these scenarios, the user doesn't really see all of these varied jumble of representations. Now that I've told you a little bit about what queue files is, let me dig deeper into its design and implementation so you understand what's actually happening here. I'm going to start off by showing you the life of a typical video queue file, and I'm going to use this, you know, same example for the next four or five slides so it retains continuity. So the first question you might ask yourself is, well, okay, how is a queue file created, and what am I as a user supposed to do here? So the answer is, the adaptation system developer will write a utility which takes as input, say, a video, and uses standard codecs and tools that are out there to generate alternate representations that are scaled and formatted for a set of devices. This doesn't have to be all the devices that you own, it's some set. The utility then creates a new queue file and moves the original video and the alternate representations that it's generated within the queue file. It then links in a bunch of policies that govern what the application sees when the queue file is accessed. This utility is registered with the file system's change notification mechanism, so it's automatically alerted every time a new video is added. So as far as the user is concerned, all of this automation just happens under the hood, so he doesn't really have to interact with the system. Now, the next question that might come to your mind is, what are these policies that I'm talking about? So each queue file has to provide us with four policies that govern how an application interacts with the queue file. Each policy is a small C code module which runs safely in a user-level isolated sandbox. So first, we have the name policy, which decides what name the application sees. Now, we need a name policy because applications expect a file name that, you know, the user would select on. And many of these file names are actually sensitive to the file type. So we need a name that the application can see. So the name policy can now look at the access context and determine if any of the representations that it encapsulates fit this. It could then return zero file names, telling the application, hey, I have no appropriate representation for you, in which case the application doesn't see any file. On the other hand, if the name policy returns one or more names back to the application sees those logical files. Let me illustrate this with the example. So on the left here, we have a pseudocode for a very simple name policy. But what this illustrates is that the name policy is really simple because all it has to do is, depending on the context, return a valid name. So here we see that the TiVo is sensitive. It needs video files which end in a .tivo. So when the TiVo accesses the queue file, it sees the name foo.tivo. The desktop and the handheld, on the other hand, are expecting an MP4. So when they access the queue file, the name policy returns to them foo.mp4. So in this example, the names that are being returned are those of static representations encapsulated within the queue file. However, this doesn't have to be a limitation. In fact, the name policy can dynamically instantiate a new name that caters best for the current device or for the current access context. By providing applications with the ability to instantiate this new name dynamically as it sees fit, we greatly increase the flexibility that is afforded in using our system. Next, we have the content policy, which returns the inode of a specific file with the correct representation for the access context. Now, we need a content policy because even if two devices see the same file type, they might expect the actual data given to them to be scaled or resolved in a different manner. So in our example, when the TiVo accesses the queue file, it's expecting an appropriately formatted video. So it just sees the video representation that's been formatted appropriately for it. Observe that both the desktop and the handheld see the same name, foo.mp4. But the desktop, you know, has a nice brick screen. It's connected to wall power, so it doesn't have any power constraints. On the other hand, the handheld has a much smaller screen size, and it's running off of battery power. So this is where something neat happens. Because we have a name and a content policy that are distinct, the content policy can return the inode of the high-resolution video back to the desktop while keeping the name foo.mp4, while the cell phone sees a low-fidelity video that's been appropriately formatted for it. Now, since queue files are incorporated in the file system, The content policy can also dynamically create a new file, populate it with appropriate content, and return the inode of this newly created file back to the application. So dynamic content generation of the sort allows the application, really, or I guess the adaptation system, to do things like conserve storage space and instead dynamically generate resources, representations, only when it's absolutely needed. So far, I've talked about what the application sees when it accesses a Q file. What if an application wishes to edit a representation? So handling edits is a little bit harder. So let's say you have multiple representations. It's quite easy to understand, you know, an edit to a high fidelity representation can be used to generate alternate lower fidelity representations, probably, you know, pretty seamlessly. However, it's much harder to figure out what should happen when a low fidelity representation is edited. How should these changes be reintegrated back with the original high fidelity representation? So to answer this question, we provided an edit policy that allows the adaptation system developer to decide how to handle edits. Currently, Qfiles allow one of three different actions. The edit is allowed, disallowed, or versioned, in which case a new version is generated on the fly. So in our example, the desktop is allowed to edit the high fidelity representation that it sees. This is because as soon as it updates the data, the file system's chain notification mechanism can alert the utility, which can then go off and generate alternate lower fidelity copies. On the other hand, the cell phone is disallowed to edit its representation. We also realized something else. Now, there could be metadata, such as tags, ratings, etc., that users should be allowed to edit on any device that they own. And often this is, you know, the edit that they perform most generically. By maintaining the same high fidelity metadata across all representations, we can easily allow edits of metadata, as those can easily be identified by looking at the file and, you know, which block the edits are happening in. Finally, a Q file may provide an optional cache policy. We implemented this because we realized that caching is really critical for performance in a distributed file system. So the cache policy is really simple. All it tells the file system is which of the encapsulated representations ought to be cached on a given device. So in our example, each of these devices have a cache policy which just say, oh, I'm only going to cache the particular video that I can play back. So these four policies combine to provide a default view of the Q file as one or more files to the application. For instance, let's say I could have a set of policies that decide that when a laptop accesses the Q file over a low bandwidth network, it sees a single low resolution video. While this works great in most cases, sometimes you might have power users or maybe Qfile-aware applications that wish to do more. Hence, each Qfile also provides a baked-in raw view, which the user can pull up by just, you know, appending the word raw to the end of the Qfile name. When accessing this view, the Qfile reveals itself as, you know, a collection of representations, policies, etc. And this view can be manipulated just like a file system directory. So when I told you about the Qfile utility, which creates all the representations and moves them in, it's actually manipulating the Qfile in this raw view. The default view and the raw view are really the two endpoints in the spectrum of transparency. In between, an adaptation system developer may define an arbitrary number of custom intermediary views. For instance, let's say this video Qfile happened to be my wedding video, and I really want to play it back on my laptop, but I want to show off the highest quality representation that I have. I don't really care how long it takes to fetch over a spotty network. So what I could do is access this Q file in the high-res custom view that it provides. And what this returns to me is the best quality representation encapsulated by the Q file. Now, observe one other thing. No application modification is really required to see these other views. And this is because we chose to embed the view name in the file name because applications really treat file names as a black box and they don't really interpret it. So when the user, you know, accesses a particular view, this view name can be passed up transparently to our policies and the policy can examine the view, which it treats as an additional input of context and returns the best representation. Well, now that I've told you what the Qfile abstraction is, I'll next try and demonstrate its usefulness and versatility through several context-aware systems that we built. I'm going to describe four of them, and there's a couple more in the paper. So the first application I'm going to talk about is a power management application. We made the observation that playing uncompressed music in, you know, the WAV file is much more power efficient than playing back compressed MP3s, which need to be decoded and decompressed before they can be played. So we were trying to figure out if there was an easy way for us to exploit this observation without, you know, putting any additional burden on the user. So what we did was we created a utility which is alerted every time a new MP3 is added to the file system. This utility does something very simple. It basically takes the MP3 and generates an uncompressed WAV representation of the same song. It then creates a new queue file and pushes both the MP3 and the WAV representations within the queue file. Then the cache policy for this queue file says that if a mobile device accesses the queue file and happens to have spare storage, and you know if it's connected to a good power outlet, we should use some of that spare storage to cache the uncompressed WAV representation. The name and content policies simply dictate that if a WAV representation is cached on the device, it ought to be played. Otherwise, play back the MP3. Now, as far as the user is concerned, you know, when he hits play on his device, it's just playing back a song that he likes. Only if he explicitly looks at the song name does he see, oh, is the MP3 being played, or is my WAV version being played? And what we found was this application only took us about 94 lines of policy code, and in practice, we found that it improves the battery lifetime of a cell phone and a handheld by 4 to 11%, and the user is not really involved in doing anything at all except for, you know, saying play. The second application that we built was a copy and write versioning scheme. So through the file systems literature, we'd come across many interesting file systems that built a versioning functionality within it. And we found these very useful. So what we were curious to see is, can we, you know, in some way incorporate this copy and write versioning functionality within an existing file system without, you know, too many modifications and without recreating an entire new file system? So we created a queue file that maintains past versions of LaTeX source files as I was, you know, writing the paper, so that made sense. So what my edit policy for this queue file says is every time the user makes a modification, the information required to undo his changes are saved to an undo log. The name and the content policies for the default view are really simple. They just work for like for a regular file, as in it just pulls up the current view, the current version of the file. Now, if a user wants to see a past version of the file, he explicitly accesses the queue file in its versions view by supplying the versions keyword at the end of the file. The name policy for the versions view exploits the fact that a queue file may return one or more names to return the names of all past versions found in the undo log. Now, the user can look at it, you know, these are timestamps, so you can just say, oh, I want to view a particular version, at which point in time, the content policy dynamically instantiates the specific version that he wants and returns it to the user. Dynamic content generation allows us to conserve storage space and really improve performance, too, because the version that's required is only generated when the user needs it, as opposed to, you know, saving an entire checkpoint of a massive file every time the user edits it. Additionally, we created a whole bunch of arbitrary custom views, and one of these is pretty interesting. We call it the yesterday view. It recreates the old file view that was present in AFS. So effectively, this returns to me the version of the file as it looked at midnight yesterday. And this application only took us about 55 lines of code to implement. So the third application is called resource-aware directory listing, and I really like it because I found it very useful. So what we'd observed was that streaming music and video files often leads to a poor experience if the network quality is not good enough to stream the video seamlessly. Unfortunately, current directory listing applications don't really distinguish between content that can be streamed easily and, you know, perform well and content that can't. So we implemented a resource-aware directory listing as a queue file policy, which, you know, clears up this confusion. Say two clients access a media server. The queue file's name policy returns a valid name only if the client's network connection, or network bandwidth, rather, to the server is sufficient to stream back the video seamlessly. So in this case, the Wi-Fi client is returned a valid name while the GPRS client sees no names, as in there's no video for it to play back. So this worked well because it helped us set our expectations better. But after using it for a while, we realized that, you know, sometimes it's confusing to not see files on the server that you want, and at other times, we might have access to a video player that supports buffering, and hence we might just want to prefetch a file. So we also implemented a custom all view, which explicitly tags high bitrate items that can't be fetched with a currently unplayable suffix. So the user can still access the file, cache it, etc., but he's been warned. So if he's trying to stream it, it's going to be poor. This application only took us about 98 lines of code to implement. Last, I'm going to talk about Odyssey. So two of my co-authors spent 6 years implementing Odyssey, an application-aware adaptation scheme that monitors resource usage on a device and varies the fidelity of data. So I decided to recreate Odyssey as a Q file. Specifically, I was recreating the image viewing functionality. So I started off by writing a simple utility that accepts a JPEG image as an input and generates 4 alternate representations of this scaled to different resolutions. All of them and certain policies are encapsulated by this Q file. When a client connects to the Q file, all clients that connect to the Q file see the same name, bar.jpg, which is the name of the original image. However, the content policy examines the network bandwidth and returns to each client the image that can be served in 1 second. We also implemented an edit policy whereby only the high fidelity image, seen on the laptop in the far right can be edited, while edits everywhere else are disallowed. But the user can go in and, tag things or specify ratings and give comments, et cetera. So in effect, what I'd done was recreate Odyssey in about 82 lines of policy code in about a week and a half. I was super excited when I did this. I ran up to my advisor and I was like, hey, I improved upon you by an order of magnitude or 2. Give me my PhD now. So he kind of looks at me and goes, there's this whole thing about novelty, and 15 years later, it's not novel anymore. So go do more work. These 4 case studies, I hope, have helped demonstrate that Q files are useful and effective. I'll next speak briefly about our evaluation, describe some related work, and then conclude. So I spoke to you about 4 case studies that I implemented, and there's 2 more that's in the paper. The table below shows you, these are the case studies, and the number of lines of policy code that we had to specify to implement each of them. As you can see, most of them take less than 100 lines of code. I implemented most of them in a week or 2, and some of them only took me a day or 2 as I grew closer to the deadline and, more familiar with the abstraction. Now, you might be wondering, how difficult is it to actually implement Q files in a file system? So our prototype implementation of Q files is in the Blue file system, which is a distributed file system developed at the University of Michigan. Q files add about 1,600 lines of code to BlueFS's 28,000. And the reason we're able to get away with implementing so little code is that Q files can reuse existing directory support. And the reason here is that directories provide a static listing of content, while what a Q file really does is provides a dynamic listing of content based on the context in which the file's been accessed. Hence, we can reuse all of the existing directory support in existing file systems and simply change how some of the VFS operations themselves work and put in the hooks for our policies. So the key takeaway point of this slide, really, is that Q files are easy to implement, and Q file policies are, pretty easy to create, too. I'll next describe our performance evaluation briefly. The takeaway point of the performance evaluation is really that Q files add low overhead given a warm cache. So I'll start off by describing a micro benchmark, which is a comparison of the directory listing overhead. So in both these graphs, in blue, we have a directory which has 100 images. We call this the no replication case. In blue, we have the Q file case, in which we use the Odyssey case study. So we have a directory with 100 image Q files, and each Q file has 4 alternate representations. When the Q file is accessed, the original version of the image is being returned. So as you can see, in the warm cache case, Q files add about 3% overhead. And this really is the cost of executing our policies on a directory listing, which is both the name and the content one. In the cold case scenario, we see that Q files add a 3x overhead. Now, why is this? This is because each Q file access requires 2 additional disk seeks on a cold server so that the Q file attributes and data can be fetched so the current representation is selected. Now, this looks pretty bad, but in reality, the absolute worst case overhead per file in the cold scenario is really 0.5 milliseconds per file. Now, I'm going to pull up my straw man, which is, if I compare this to the original Odyssey evaluation, in which 500 images, as in the original 100 images, and all its alternate representations are placed in a directory, we see that Q files do a lot better, clearly, right? So in the warm case, we see that it's 2x better. In the cold case, it's 3 times better. And the reason here is really, what a Q file does is it encapsulates different representations and returns to you the best one. So yes, you only have to return the listing for 100 files and not 500. But what this shows you is that the policy execution overhead is pretty okay compared to the replicated case. We also ran an application-level benchmark where we used the Linux's grep utility to search the kernel source file for a variable that occurred 9 times in the source. So we have the default file system shown in green again, and we have the Q file scenario shown in blue. In the Q file setup, we use the copy and write versioning scheme, whereby we take, I believe, 19,000 source files in the Linux kernel source, which is every c.as and every .c, .h, and .s file, and creates an alternate version. So the Q file encapsulates the current version of the file and a checkpoint of approximately the same size as the original file. When it's accessed in the default view, only the current version of the file is returned. In that case, we see that in the warm scenario, Q files add about a 1% overhead, which is really the cost of running the policies again. But in the cold case, you see that Q files only add 6% overhead. And the reason here is, as soon as we have a little bit of work, which is, you know, the file data has to be read for grep to run, the cost of executing the Q files policies is amortized. So the takeaway here is, as soon as we have a little bit of computation work or, you know, additional reads to amortize the Q file cost, our performance overhead, our overhead is really low. Additionally, QFiles enable us to do something cool. We can search not just the current version of the file, but also all past versions of the file by simply accessing the QFile in its versions view. So the bars in orange show how long it takes us to run grep in this view. In the warm case, we see that about twice as much data is being read, hence it takes twice as long, you know, because the reads are from the cache. However, in the cold case, we'll see that despite the fact that about twice as much data is being read, it only adds a 31% overhead. And the reason here is that all the QFile contents are located close to each other on disk, and you know they can just be read pretty fast. Let me next talk about some of the work that this is related to. Of the various files, of the various systems that chain the presentation of data for users, the most famous is the semantic file system. So what the semantic file system does is it expands on a file's namespace by allowing users to search not just on a file name, but also other attributes, and then returns all the listings in a virtual directory. In comparison, what QFiles does is it expands on both the name and the content space, because now you can have the best representation that matches your current context. By incorporating a common abstraction for context-aware data management within the file system, we can recreate existing adaptation systems like Ninja, Odyssey, Puppeteer, et cetera, as simple adaptation policies. There have been prior systems such as Mac OS X bundles and AFS's AdSys directory that permit the dynamic resolution of file content. QFiles provide a general abstraction without baking in specific policies in the file system. So to conclude, I propose QFiles, a new abstraction for context-aware data management. I've demonstrated that QFiles can provide first-class support for context within an existing file system. And I hope I've communicated that it's easy to create new and interesting context-aware applications by using this common abstraction, you know, in a few hundred lines of code. Thank you.
There's only one, though, right, Marco?
Oh, sorry.
So it's really interesting, and the policies are attachable and writable by, like, say, the owner and creator of the object.
Yes.
But they're also sort of the metadata in the file system, and my data management policy might want to process through them. Have you been thinking about me doing a find, pulling out the policies as metadata and processing them, let's say, to find all the lies of names in my system so I could figure out all the possible things that are equivalent?
Huh. So we've thought of having indexing. I mean, I guess what you want is if you have an interesting indexer or something that grabs metadata from the files and stores it and provides it in a way for applications to use, that would be one way of doing it. And in BlueFS specifically, we actually have this way of running persistent queries where you can have queries over metadata, file type information, et cetera. We don't really use that very much here, but we could have systems like that that do this and provide the indexing up for use.
No, what I'm thinking about really is the person doing data management who's trying to figure out what you are doing to their apparent static objects in the file system to understand what those policies are doing to the what they think the file system looks like.
Yeah, so I guess we could provide a debug mode or some additional view on top which provides a listing of, hey, here's the representations that are being statically generated, here's ones that could be dynamically generated given different contexts, and effectively allow the application developer to see that here's different things that could be done, and then allow him to specify if his policies want to do more or select something from how the file system is currently selecting and returning representations.
And on top of that, that application would have to be able to parse those policies and understand them.
Well, so the policies themselves are being crafted by the adaptation system developers per se. So they have infinite flexibility. And if you saw what I did, you know, the Qfile has got multiple policies, right? So they can just access a Qfile in a raw view and link in their policies. So let's say I was using Audio Player X, and tomorrow I'm using iTunes. The iTunes developer can just come in, supply his policies, and go to the Qfiles and plug in his policies instead of whatever else was governing it previously. Thank you.